And hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, things, thoughts, help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, we've got to talk about some very important stuff. In the studio with me co-hosting is Stephanie Dombra, as usual. And a special guest. A special guest, good friend of mine, Deborah Chase. What does Deborah have to talk about? Well, in ancient Greece, Helen of Troy, the instigator of the Trojan War, was a paragon of beauty. She exuded a physical brilliance that would put Cindy Crawford to shame. She was the toast of Athens, celebrated not for her kindness but her intellect, and not for her intellect but for her physical proportions. Helen of Troy. Why did Greek men find Helen and other beautiful women so intoxicating? What is the story of this intoxication? Trying to find an answer to this, the philosophers of the day devoted a great deal of time to this question. Plato wrote of the golden proportions, in which other things he talked about the width of an ideal face would be two-thirds its length, while the nose would be no longer than the distance between the eyes. Plato's golden proportions, however, haven't quite held up the rigors. Symmetry in the human face became very important. The question of beauty becomes very important. We sit here and we look at people and their attitude towards their own physical self. We wonder. We find people who have a thing called body dysmorphia. In body dysmorphia, you find a human will look at one characteristic of their body. Could be their eyes, could be their hips, could be their fat, could be their nose. And they hate it. Beyond rational. They think it's just plain ugly. What makes for beauty? What is the question of beauty all about? Well, Deborah Chase is a researcher, and she's written three books about beauty. And in her books about beauty, she has asked this question. Deborah, welcome to BAI.
Thank you for having me here.
Let me see, why don't I hear that? Try that again.
I'm so glad to be here.
And Stephanie Dombra, thanks for being here, too.
Hi, Armand.
Okay, now, Deborah, what's this about?
Well, I think that all societies in their own way have been obsessed with beauty. While we today have cosmetic surgery and strange things like Botox and fillers, and it might seem to be a very modern obsession, it really goes back, as you said, to Helen of Troy. Women in those days did everything they could to be beautiful. For example, the desired hair color for the Greek woman was blonde, but most of them were dark-haired and dark-eyed, and literally they would use a solution of lye and water and bake their head in the sun with a deadly poison so that they could achieve the blonde look.
But there must have been something about blonde that made them more attractive, appealing.
Well, actually, the blondes were introduced into the Greek culture by slaves from the Nordic regions. So, but what I think in that case, it was rare, and blondes are still rare. True blondes are still rare, and that's one of the criteria of beauty. It has to be hard to achieve. And in every era.
Oh, wait, more than hard to achieve. If you were of Nordic descent, then you have genes that carried with them messengers that were of value. For example, the Nordic people knew how to store food, mm-hmm. right? Whereas the people from the Southern Hemisphere didn't know how to store food. So if the Nordic qualities, they must have represented something that was psychologically or to your DNA, somehow it was appealing genetically.
Definitely, the blue eyes and the blonde hair became a standard of beauty. Again, very hard to achieve for 99% of the population in Greece and in Rome. So
99% what? Blonde?
No, we're dark hair, dark eyes. And so again, the rarity is seems to be a very important feature. Interestingly, in Sweden, blondes are no big deal. Brunettes, you know, dark hair is actually considered particularly exotic and interesting. So whatever's the rare, like gold, like diamonds, which, I mean, I think rose quartz is a beautiful stone, and it makes beautiful necklaces and beautiful earrings, but it's ubiquitous. It's not valued for its beauty. It's also valued for its rarity. And we create these combinations of beauty images. For example, in the Civil War, the ideal beauty had a very long neck and very narrow sloping shoulders. And all the clothing was designed to disguise broad shoulders. And not that there wasn't much you could do. You could like stick your head up in the air and poke your chin out to give your neck a little more length. But it was an ideal that was very hard to achieve.
Well, during the Civil War, let's see, you would have had more broad shoulders because most women were working using their upper bodies.
Exactly.
So if you used your upper body, then that meant you were a working woman, whereas if you had sloping shoulders, it meant that you didn't have to work.
Exactly, and that's also true with the mandarins, that they grew their nails very, very, very long, which was an implication that they couldn't work because they had these very long nails. So it also, the rarity is also a sign of wealth and a sign of prestige.
But it doesn't hold for men, right?
The long nails?
No, men with small shoulders. No, you want broad shoulders on men.
No, in men it was broad shoulders. It's actually the proportions in men have almost been unchanged since the times of the Greeks and Romans. If you look at the Statue of David,
the bigger your wallet, the more attractive you are. That's the proportion.
Pretty much so, right?
It goes back to what we were talking about, Stephanie. Remember the thing about ranking?
Yes.
You know, ranking seems to be what seems to be essential for men. Where is a man on the rank of men, right? That's for the men's most important.
What can they offer?
What can they offer? What do they have? Mm-hmm. Okay, back to this. So symmetry is one aspect.
Yes, that's a very important symmetry. In fact, and it goes, it's multicultural, too. The same symmetry appears across all races and all periods as the same proportion. One of the interesting analyses I saw was that they analyzed Denzel Washington's face, and it was almost in perfect proportion to statues like David or the Dying Gaul, both one in Rome and one in Florence. But it was the same, literally, proportions, and that in some way had a visceral response for people.
He is a good-looking guy.
It's got the symmetry.
He is one good-looking guy. All right, so let's go back. We're speaking with Deborah Chase. Now, just to give you an idea of who Deborah is, as well as a good friend, Deborah decided to develop a blog about beauty itself. And she went on to find out what's real and what's not real in things that could help you look the way you want to look. And Deborah did a very, very exciting thing. She did a before and after. You want to talk about that before, and then we'll go on to talking about
Go ahead. Well, I've been a health and beauty writer for some time, and I wrote a book called The Medically Based No-Nonsense Beauty Book. And it looked at what you can and can't do, what products do work. What we look at as a beauty problem is actually a physical change in the body, when the skin dries out, when it breaks out, when the hair falls out. This is all caused by hormonal changes, physical changes, cellular changes. And that's the bad news. The good news is there are actually things that are available, that are affordable, that are safe, that can impact on these cellular changes.
Right, like you have to buy the Deborah Chase Vanishing Cream.
Right, there is no Deborah Chase Vanishing
Cream. I mean, we want to say here that Deborah's beauty is that she's not selling anything. She's offering something.
Yeah, everything is for free. I think that's important.
Yes, one of
the things on the internet that I noticed that when I went on it is that something like 85% of the beauty sites are really e-commerce sites, that they're selling products. And you have to be very careful. I mean, they'll say, there'll be a review of some products, and then wouldn't you know it, the one product that's absolutely better than all the others is their product. So you have to, and you can't do that in print, and you can't do that on TV or radio, but the Internet's the Wild West, and so there are these sites out there. So one of the reasons I did that was because I had written the medically based no-nonsense beauty book to talk about what causes the problems, what you need to look for, and what can or you can't do.
What do you mean by medically based? You mean this isn't just based on a concept, but you have a scientific bottom to it.
Yes. I mean, I got into it in an unusual route. I was working my way through college at NYU, and if you work full-time, you get 9 free credits. And my dad was a blacklisted writer, so paying for college was just not an option for him. And I really liked the freedom and taking care of myself, and I was living in the village, so, I mean, it was cool. And I'd gone to Bronx High School of Science, and I had thought I was going to be a doctor. I had still thoughts of it in that time. I married one instead, very, very 1950s, but...
We've had him on the air with us. He's a good doctor.
He's a very good doctor. So I got a job at NYU working for a dermatologist. And he turned out to be one of the first scientists who studied vitamin A acid, which became retin A. And as the bottom of the food chain in a research project, my job was to do the background material for the papers we were publishing. That, in addition to that, and cleaning out the rabbit cages. And so I was in the library at my more favorite part of the job, and I discovered all this information, what causes your skin to be oily, what causes blackheads, I mean, and then what you can do about it. I was really excited about it. And so I talked about it with my friends, and I became kind of like, the local guru of people would call me up.
Give me an example
of
something that people don't know about that's really simple, like pimples on your nose or bags under your eyes. Bags under your eyes. Is Preparation H the perfect solution?
Well, the thing is that in some cases it really works, and it also depends on what's causing the bags. And for many people, it's allergies. And that is also, if you know that, then you can take a lot of preventive measures to prevent it. And what's good about Preparation H is it tightens the skin and under the eye without causing wrinkling. And it also, it stops the inflammation, which is causing the blood vessels to leak fluid, which is causing the bags. So you want to get to the root cause of something, not just slap on an extra coat of paint. So Preparation H is wonderful. Another thing you can do for if you have bags under your eyes is raise the head of your bed about 2 inches. You get a nice thick travel book. You put one on either side of the headboard, on the right side, the left side, and this creates a little tilt so that the fluids don't accumulate overnight. They kind of drain away. And it's that kind of looking at the cause and effect and then using the right tool for the problem.
Mm-hmm. Other popular thing that you have discovered, what about, oily skin, which I know people are very concerned about?
Well, the most important thing that you can do for oily skin is not use a moisturizer. The people think, everybody has to use a moisturizer. Well, oily skin, the way the skin holds water, the way it doesn't become dry, is that it has a coat of oil on the surface. A moisturizer provides a coat of oil on the surface to help you hold on to water. You don't need that. What you do need is thorough cleansing. And the best thing you can do for oily skin is to use scrubbing grains, not too strong, and use them 3 times a week. And in the summer, use an alcohol based toner. You don't want to cut off the oil glands entirely because they help you retain a nice balance of water. But in the summer months, particularly between sweating and oil production, you're going to want to take extra care. But the most important thing that I discovered that for everybody's type of skin is protection against the sun. And up to age 60, about 90% of all skin aging is caused by sun damage. After 60, hormones kick in or actually disappear, but the hormone issues kick in. But up to age 60, and if you protect your skin against the sun, it 24/7 through the winter months, there's plenty of UVA and UVB rays around, even in the grayest of winter, to damage your skin cells. And I actually did an interesting post yesterday on my blog about antioxidants. And antioxidants have been promoted as a cure for cancer, a cure for heart disease. Other people say they don't do anything at all. In fact, they can cause lung cancer. And I guess you could say the truth lies in between. But when it comes to skincare, antioxidants actually protect the skin from damage from UVA and UVB. Protect the DNA of the cells.
All right. Now, let's go back a little bit.
Okay.
I know lots of people who love the sun, and they don't have damaged skin right up through age 60. There are a lot of people out there who are sun worshippers who have beautiful skin. So there are certain people who are sensitive and certain people who are not.
Definitely.
Okay, so it's not an all one.
No, and we don't know who they are. We don't know. But now, it's interesting when you talk about that. They've actually identified the gene in people who are sensitive to cigarettes and who will get lung cancer, which is, is a tremendous benefit to figure out what your risks are, because not everybody gets lung cancer from cigarettes.
Right. Now, Deborah, in your search for this helping people get what they want out of their own beauty approach or physical approach, this is your act of giving. This is something that you like to do. But this question about beauty is what I want to go back to now. So there was a period of time when you would look at certain paintings and the full-figured woman was the ideal form. Then somewhere it turned into Twiggy. Mm-hmm. What took place? What made us switch from one to the other? Oh. And we have our ideas around that, too.
That's one of my favorite topics. And I'd like to first start with what the full-figured woman represented. And the full-figured woman of the late 18th, early 19th century, she represented was a healthy woman. And in those days, tuberculosis was ravaging the population. And that the sign of a thin, pale woman was seen as she had TB, and that people were afraid they would catch TB from her. And the family would shut her up in the room, and they were afraid their families would be shunned. So a healthy appearance became the prevailing standard of beauty.
Now, this bust to hip to waist ratio. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what that is. Bust size or bosom size.
Okay.
Measured in inches, I guess.
Right.
Help me out. I'm a guy.
Well, it that's an interesting thing. Unlike the symmetry that we see in facial recognition, the bust to hip to waist ratio has varied wildly over the centuries, and it's driven it's driven by other factors. I mean, in the 19th century, it was driven by this terror of tuberculosis, and then
if you have a terror of tuberculosis, and that's mainly a chest disease, mm-hmm. a big bosom means you ain't got TB.
Big weight. You needed to have...
The fatter the better.
Yes, the fatter the better.
No. I mean, was it really the fatter the better, or was it Rubens?
Rubens. I mean, yeah, Rubens. But I mean, it was much, much larger. You know, I would say probably size 20, size 22.
Oof.
And because they would corset in those waists, but the very big busts, the very big hips, and then
size 20. I don't even know what a 20 is. What size bosom would that be?
Like a 44.
That's the average.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the ideal. I mean, that they would squish people in with those corsets to try to achieve that hourglass figure. I mean, that's also very unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, you know, that many attempts to be beautiful are actually
at the same time, and I know this may be funny as a man asking the questions, I almost wish you would ask them, Stephanie, because I feel embarrassed by the questions. If you have a 44-inch bosom, mm-hmm. are we looking for an equal-sized bottom hip?
Well,
I mean, what's the ratio there? Was it always, you know, they always talked about the hourglass figure. Was that always the ideal?
It was in different periods of time. I don't think, I mean, today it's not 44. It's more like 36. 36, 22, I guess 36. Or 40, but it's not just, you know, one part, everything to be big. They were proportioned out, and it had a shape. So that lasted actually a relatively short period of time, although there's certainly a lot of pictures painted with that body. But in the 20s, as women became emancipated and they started smoking cigarettes, they got the vote, they cut their hair short, the desirable body became this tiny, skinny, flat-chested, skinny-hipped figure. And with, you know, the flapper dress, which was short, which was straight. And that was desirable by women and desirable by men.
Why?
I've read this, and in women's group discussions, the answer also lies, and I'll give you the answer in a second. We saw that again in the 70s, where the normal kind of proportions of the 50s and 60s with normal bust, I guess more 40s and 50s, you know, big bust, small waist, nice hips, was replaced by Twiggy. And again, women were going through a period of emancipation. They were, you know, trying to crash through the glass ceiling. Women were running for office. I mean, they had jobs that they never had before. They had periods of influence that they never had before. And the ongoing theory is that as women became more powerful in society, that men treasured the fragile, thin look. And I think that was also true in the 20s, that's what became desirable, the skinny, fragile look, that, you know, that you might be, you know, a Supreme Court justice, but you're just a tiny little thing and you need a man to protect you.
So that's one theory about it would be, because you're becoming more powerful, I want you to look more fragile. That almost makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the word emancipation seems to make sense because of the word man that's in it.
Yes.
Emancipation, meaning that if you lose your estrogen, if you have less body fat, you have lower estrogen. And if you have lower estrogen, you have probably more testosterone by balance.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you have more male characteristics as well as female characteristics, and that the body that I'm looking at now is kind of androgynous. It's a combination of male-female. Mm-hmm. You don't have those female things falling all over you to drag my attention, and what I'm attracted to is the combination of male-female,
mm-hmm.
or what is attractive is a combination of male-female, especially as it wants to step into the business world. Because a very female-female, you know, somebody who is a shapely figured person goes into the workplace, the attraction gets in their way. Men are always falling all over them sexually, and that becomes the focus. Whereas if they could shift that focus and say, no, look at me, the person.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
So I think emancipation mm-hmm. is the right word. I think women, in order to not be seen just as sex objects, have decided to do that. And what's an interesting thing is, as they become thinner and thinner, they went out and they bought breasts.
That's true. That's true.
To add to it, which makes them now attractive, yet unavailable. See, it puts the combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't have the estrogen that would normally attract me, because I, as male, would respond to the fat-based estrogen that a woman would be carrying. So now you're thin and you're not carrying that, so you're not putting out that signal. But you do have the breasts that would attract my eye. So it's a very mixed signal. Stephanie?
And I think in the age of all these supermodels, they may have this whole thinness going on, but their face is still that very beautiful estrogenic face. I don't think usually the models really look androgynous in their face. They're very, very distinct with the high cheekbones, and they're very symmetrical. So it's an illusion. They're still very estrogenic women, but it's all suppressed with their weight loss or
when
health.
You say an estrogenic woman, what do you mean?
Well, an estrogenic woman really does have that kind of shapely figure, the more of the full figure of the Marilyn Monroe type. There are plenty of women that look like this still, but the model image that we are bombarded with in the media is this very straight, narrow, busty woman, but the face is still there, that so to speak, blonde, beautiful figure, you know, that really is still bombarding us even to this day. But they are still very typical women, but it's suppressed. And I think that we're giving a lot of people mixed signals.
Well, you see, that's the whole thing. We've gotten to a society where the old signals don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what you say, Deborah. Deborah says, you know, Neanderthals followed the rules. But, you know, we've kind of stepped out of that.
I think that we're hardwired as human beings to look for certain things in mates. And I think that women look for men that can protect them. And in modern day, that translates to men who earn a lot of money. And men were looking for women to, you know, maintain the species. So that translates into fertility, and that translates into youth. And I've seen it over and over again where a man will pay attention to an average-looking young girl over an attractive older woman. But, you know, what you mentioned about the models, I'd like to share a kind of an eye-opening experience that I had dealing with a supermodel. And as a beauty writer, I write books for other people. I ghost them. And so I was called in to talk about a book project with Gisele Bündchen, who's this iconic supermodel. And men want to date her, and women want to look like her. And so I was really excited to see this woman in person. And the meeting started late, and everybody piled into this huge conference room, and they decided not to introduce each other. And so they started talking, and I was disappointed that Gisele wasn't there. I figured, well, they're just going to discuss it without her. And then as the meeting went on, I realized that they were talking to Gisele, what do you think? And I'd hear a voice, and this went on for a few more minutes. I said, look, I've got to see her. I mean, how could you miss this woman who's been on the cover of so many magazines and Victoria's Secret model, walking down the runway with those wings? You don't forget somebody that looks like that. So I start really, literally face-to-face, looking at every face in the room. And finally, I realize that the girl who I thought was an intern two chairs away was actually this legendary supermodel. And she was an attractive girl, but she was wearing baggy jeans and a baggy t-shirt, no makeup, her hair pulled up in a bun. You would not have stopped her on the street. And I realized, wow, Gisele doesn't even look like Gisele, that this is an image so unattainable, whether it's camera angles or makeup or retouching, but it's not real. It's just not real.
We're going to have to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about this. Remember, you wanted to look like Cinderella? What did your mother say?
Okay.
What did your mom say?
It's not real. It's a cartoon.
Right. It's a cartoon. You can't look like Cinderella. We're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. Our guest, Deborah Chase. We're talking about beauty. We'll be right back.
Esperanza murió de hambre, soñando, se ahoga en su condena. Camina y caminará por la vía del tren hacia un nuevo mundo, incluyendo. Camina y caminará por la vía del tren hacia un nuevo mundo. Ideas dentro de su tarro, hay que ver que traicionará la vida. Ana fue apaleada por acostarse con su misma alma, hay que ver que traicionará la vida. Camina y caminará por la vía del tren hacia un nuevo mundo, incluyendo. Camina y caminará por la vía del tren.
Only here on WBAI. Armand DeMille here with you with the positive mind, listening to Rumba Submarino. Love that understatement. Understatement. Such a beautiful word. You know, understated beauty. Beautiful word. You know, that's something that is. You find somebody who's got an understated beauty. It's there. It's present. But it's not punching out at you. It exists. It's a natural beauty.
It's interesting you said that because just this month, in one of the magazines, Jessica Simpson, who is certainly not a proponent of natural beauty. She's famous for her heavy makeup and heavy blonde hair, is gone into these photographs with no makeup. And just her hair, kind of raggedy in a braid, and she looks beautiful. It's just unbelievably eloquent and interesting.
She's taken some kind of a war. She had a big war. I remember she came out with a big war against thinness.
Uh huh.
She was out there saying, you know, we're obsessed with thinness, and we're crazy about our obsession with thinness. Physical attractiveness is not the only factor influencing interpersonal attractiveness. But it's very, very important. So this is, here comes a woman and her attitude towards herself. And a woman ages. And as she gets older, she sees her skin betraying her in ways, in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I look in the mirror and it looks like me older.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. But for many people looking in the mirror is a terror. It does terrible things. I had one friend who looked at a close-up mirror. You know, one of these magnifying mirrors, and said, oh, I don't want to see my face that close.
That big.
That big, right? What is it that alienates us from the aging of our own faces?
I don't know about it in men, because men's faces change even more than women's faces. If you ever go to a reunion, you can kind of see the girl and the woman at the reunion, but I can't see the boy and the man. But that doesn't bother them. For women, it's the loss of the girl they were. I mean, there was a very famous book a couple of years ago called The Girl I Left Behind Me, and which spoke about the the changes that they see, and giving up your girlishness and having to take on being a woman and all the responsibilities and that entails. And I think that we also are very ageist in our society. We don't like the old. We don't like looking old. And I think that, again, that gets back to the hardwiring for fertility, that men look for that younger, fertile look, whether it's a round face, it's a smooth skin. That's what excites them. And I think that it's hard to maintain your self-worth when nobody else feels that way. And one of the things that I noticed as I got older, and I treasure it, is that I've developed so much better friendships with women, and that I have a very large and wonderful circle of friends that are women. We're all getting older, and there's the competitiveness is gone, and it's just friendship and sharing and support. And I think that there's, you know, that's something nobody talks about, the benefits of getting older. Another thing is, you don't get so upset when things go wrong. You can deal with life a lot better at 60 than you could even at 40. You don't collapse in a crisis anymore.
Well, you say something very important here, Deborah. Thank you. I'm looking at you, and I see you. I think you're extraordinarily attractive.
Oh, thank you.
You know, but I could also see that you have this natural kind of beauty that you've developed, because I remember seeing you 2 years ago, and it was a different person.
Yes.
You know, and I could look on your blog and see you 2 years ago and see you now. And 2 years ago, your face was different than it is now. Now you're clear. You know, I can see your skin is clear. And I don't know if there's makeup on there.
No makeup.
Or no makeup. I don't know if you're
very
Botoxed.
Little.
You're probably Botoxed.
No. This is, I did Botox about 6 months ago, and it's worn off. And I enjoyed it, I actually have to say. But no, what I did was this step-by-step process. And also, I didn't want to spend the thousands that it's going to cost. And so what you're seeing here, and thank you for noticing, and it is a big change, is simply...
You glow.
Yeah, it's Retin A. I mean, this stuff, I was there when they discovered it, which is really exciting. I was so young when they discovered it, and I was like, you know, cleaning out the rabbit cages. And when I wrote my book, No Nonsense Beauty, for me, aging was a theoretical concept. I mean, I had much more problem with breakouts and my hair went flat. Now, and aging was like, whatever, you know, I it was them and me. Now, it is me. Aging is my major issue. And so in my blog, I show how to use Retin A and how easy it is. And then I had laser removal of my freckles, and that made a huge difference to my appearance. I only had like 7 or 8, but actually they're not freckles. They're called age spots. And they call them age spots for a reason. They make you look older. And one very interesting thing happened. So I'd been on Retin A for a couple of months, and then I had my freckles removed. And then I went on a trip to a meeting. I had to go by train. I had to drag my suitcase. And I had gone on a meeting last year, and nobody helped me with my suitcase. And I was like struggling and sweating and cursing to get this suitcase down this, you know, the stairs. And then this time, after I have had Retin A and the lasers, these guys ran up to help me with my bags, and I'm like, whoa, this is nice. And then it happened both coming and going, and this couldn't be a coincidence, that in some way I had, you know, lowered the threshold of age, that I was visible again to men.
Well, maybe you raised it and they said, let's help the old lady.
Well, before they would looked older, they didn't do anything. So I was like, you know, why did, and maybe it was I looked worse, but I became visible again. And I'm not looking for new friends, but you know, I'm happily married. But it was an interesting
feeling.
There is
something about that. There is something about the invisibility of the person who feels unattractive.
Mm-hmm.
When a person feels unattractive, they make themselves disappear. And when you shine, you become part of life again, and people see you differently.
I
think that is something. You
they
know?
See you differently. They see a positive energy, and people like positive energy. They like to bask in it. They draw from it. It's very draining to be with somebody who's angry and depressed and doesn't want to do anything, and is bitter. I mean, that's a hard, you know, person to hang out with. But I think that the point is that in the blog, I try to show what you can do as affordably as possible, and I don't, but not become obsessed with beauty. And that's a very important line that I never want to cross. And I want to make it clear as I write that I'm going to do these things. I'm going to make my skin look fresher and brighter. But what can't be fixed? Well, that's, you know, I just have to sparkle a little more. One of the things that can't be fixed, apparently, is your neck. And Efron wrote that book, I Hate My Neck, and I blogged, I Hate My Neck, too. And I noticed that after I had Retin A, that my neck looked a different color than my face. So I started putting Retin A on my neck. You can do that, I found out. But it didn't work as well. And you're kind of stuck with the neck that you got. And I wish somebody had told me, as they told me now, oh, if you put sunscreen on your neck, you'll prevent all the aging and the damage on it. But I discovered scarves. And when I went to France, there's a department store there called Galerie Lafayette, and there's a woman that's outside there in rain or shine 24/7, and she's tying scarves, and she ties them and ties them, and it's fascinating. And I actually realized that the French, middle age is not feared by the French women. They're a woman of a certain age. They have stature. And I think that their love of scarves may not be so much of a fashion sense, but as a beauty sense of just cover it up with a stunning scarf.
My guest is Deborah Chase. Very, very interesting. As I said, Deborah's blog, what is the name? How do you get to your blog?
You just can go Google or Yahoo to No Nonsense, and it'll take you right there.
No Nonsense?
Yeah. No Nonsense Beauty, and you'll find it. It's like number 3 or number 4.
Let me ask Stephanie Dahmer a couple of questions here. Stephanie, in your work with women over the time, their sensitivity to their appearance, you know, how do you help them when they feel so crazy about every possible thing that might be wrong, every possible... What do you do?
Well, I think most of the time I really try to help them just focus on what they can do and what they, you know, have to accept. And many women are a little more grounded, I think. As you age, you just, like Deborah says, there's a certain kind of wisdom. I mean, I've worked with women that are quite, you know, obsessed about weight and whatnot. And men, too. Really, that's kind of the fascinating thing about it. I think men have gotten, you know, with that term metrosexual, that kind of encapsulates many things. Men will pluck their eyebrows, shave their body hair. There's a lot of that kind of thing that goes on now. So it's both men and women that I see. Some of them will certainly get concerned, but I'd say for the most part, unless there's a real kind of mental disorder, you can work on the just typical things of exercise, sleep. A lot of women will do good vitamin,
what about
nutrition.
Attitude towards self? I find that if you can get to the emotions and you can get to the attitude towards self, you find that there's some parent who is disapproving of you and the way you look physically. And that if you go underneath it and you get underneath and you say, so who's really here? It's either I'm not pleasing my daddy or I'm not pleasing my mommy. And I think that has to be released as well as all the other work. We also have Lauren Sykes with us today representing a different... Lauren, you mind telling us a little about what your age group is doing around attractiveness?
I would agree with...
Deborah.
With Deborah about as you get older, I think there's just... Because I'm in my early 20s, I'm 22, so I just feel as I'm getting older, there's less emphasis on the outward appearance. You're past puberty, you've grown into your looks, you've grown into yourself, you're comfortable with your body and you're comfortable with your face. And I also think that society now is starting to realize that there's no one definition of beauty. So it's not like everyone's running to fulfill some image because everyone has a different definition of what beauty is. So I think as people mature, as people get older, again, there's more of an emphasis on, you know, wisdom, on things that, you know, that you can control, that you can help. And I think actually Dr. Aaron touched on that last week about saying that, you know, the first half of your life is based on, you know, being attractive, being able to reproduce. And the last half is more, you know, you're gaining your wisdom, you're gaining your insight. So I agree.
So you think that, or you think as well, and maybe you Stephanie, you and Deborah feel this way. Lauren says that, you know, we're not all trying to be the same beauty anymore. There's a different movement here. Now, attractiveness is one thing, but the inner stuff, the other stuff, makes you unique, and that's what's more attractive. You're not trying to attract on looks. There's enough of that.
Exactly.
You don't want to attract on looks, do you?
No. Because anyone can be beautiful. It's not, it's more to it than just how you look on the outside, because, again, everyone has their different perception of what beauty is. So to try to achieve that is pointless. You have to work on yourself.
Hmm. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We can take a couple of calls asking questions about this, maybe to Deborah Chase, Stephanie Dombra as well. This is a fascinating discussion. Physical attractiveness is not the only factor influencing interpersonal attractiveness, but a lot of it certainly seems to be a lot. It seems that warmth and competence are highly attractive qualities as well. How available a person is, how warm they are, how competent they are. We tend to be attracted to people who are attracted to us as well, which is another factor, you know. So therefore, it's not just we are attractive, but we are attractive and we are attractive to people who find us attractive. You generally do not find yourself being attracted to people who don't find you attracted. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, good afternoon. Very interesting question, conversation you're having, Dr. DeMille.
Nice to hear from you.
My question is, you're not dealing with the racial issue that has been dominant in the Western society and in the world over the past 500 years.
What do you mean dealing with it? How do you think it's different?
Well, white supremacy has been falsely promoted in the world for the past 400 or 500 years.
Oh, for sure. So now, but even among different, for certainly
Europeans,
true.
Europeans as well as other people of the human family. And you have to deal with that. That's a real issue affecting the world today.
Good. Well, help me deal with this. What's your name?
My name is Kojo.
Kojo, yeah. Help me deal with it. The statement you're saying is, yes, but me as a black man, I have a certain attitude towards me that the white man does not have. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my attitude is that I'm a human being and that I have learned to deal with that over the years of growing and seeing how false identification of the phenotype of race has been constructed during slavery, during the 19th century, and particularly, but prior to that, to colonize and dehumanize African people and Native Americans around the world. So when you understand those historic factors, you begin to place yourself in the eye of, as Dr. King said, when you love yourself, you embrace humanity, or Paul Robeson lived that identity as a human being, a great person. You accept yourself, you love yourself, you understand yourself, and then you embrace humanity on equal footing.
Very well said, Kojo. Thank you very much for bringing that in. Thank you very much. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Yes, of course, any of the factors of prejudice. And prejudice against height, weight, color, religion, all of those as well get in your way, but none as big as the racial issue. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi. I had a couple of comments. One, I was a little distressed to hear Deborah refer to the model as girl, because that just reinforced...
What model as girl?
The supermodel when she was in that meeting.
Uh-huh.
And that just kind of reinforces this idea that, oh, we have to be young girls and to be seen as attractive, or, you know, the whole work that the feminism worked on getting us to be referred to as women. So I just wanted to point that out.
Uh-huh. But
the other thing is that I was born in the 40s, and I'm very thin. So until Twiggy came in, I was just obsessed with trying to gain weight to be like everyone else. And then when thinness was in, I felt a lot more comfortable.
And now how do you feel?
Now I'm actually, I've lost a lot of weight because of having chronic fatigue, so I started feeling very unwilling to be out, you know, having myself more visible. And now I've gotten more comfortable with it and saying, well, okay, this is the way it is right now.
This is the way it is, and I'm not more visible. I will stay in the shadow because that's the way I'm feeling now because I'm more tired.
Well, no, actually, I'm coming out of the shadow. But for a while, I was sort of hiding my body because I felt very self-conscious about it. And
how would you hide it? You mean under clothing?
By wearing loose clothing so that it wasn't really obvious. But I'm now, you know, more comfortable with that's the way it is at the moment, but I'm, you know, there's no reason for me not to be visible.
That's great. Thank you so much for calling in. And thank you for your comments. 212-209-2900. Let's take one more call. This is Armando Milhaj. You're on the air. Hello there. Yes.
I'm an older woman. I'm in my 70s, and I don't wear any makeup, and my hair is gray, and I'm very, very happy with myself. But that's because, well, personal development, but also because I have a wonderful circle of female friends who has an alternative approach to looking at things. We don't subscribe to the patriarchy, which I think is the cause of all this obsession with one kind of beauty. And we actually revere people who are older, as well as the young girls and the mothers, and see the sacredness in all of them. In every age, I proudly call myself a crone. I've actually had a croning ceremony, which is a ceremony that we do for women when they get to be a certain age. So there can be a great energy and constructive joy in being older. It doesn't have to be, you know, running around thinking you're invisible.
Right, I hear you, and thank you very much. I wanted to ask you, if women wanted to find circles of women like that, or if they wanted to find people of like kind, how could they find them? Where would they go? What would they do?
Well,
I mean, forming a gang is a tough thing. You know, getting a group of people together is a tough thing. Is there a group they could go to? Is there a place they could go to? Is there a crone?
Well, there are all over the country. One of the things that I have hooked up with, which I have found very empowering, is a woman gathering. It's now called Spirit of Woman Gathering, and that's WOMONGATHERING. And it's a festival that's held once a year in June in Pennsylvania, but it's also a community of women, and it's on the Internet. And, you know, you can hook up with it, but there are circles of women that do this sort of thing all over the country.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for bringing that to us. Deborah, did you want to say something about this?
I know, I've heard of that. I think it's wonderful. I've heard of those groups.
Thank you very much for calling in. We have to be going. My guest, Deborah Chase. Deborah, the website once again?
NoNonsenseBeauty.wordpress.com, but just go to Google and No Nonsense Beauty and you'll get there.
Nice to be with all of you. We will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. And you can get a copy of today's program by going to thepositivemind.com. You can hear it. Here's a little Art Farmer for Michael. Thank you.